The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 64. At just over $53,000 per year, the United States has the sixth highest per capita income of any country in the world. But that pales in comparison to the number one country, Qatar, whose citizens make an average of $98,000 per year. I wonder how much of that is spent on air conditioning.
I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin heart is burning, then well, you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going in soon. Then you don't have to worry, 'cause we're going in soon.
Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that'll help you travel more while spending less. I'm your host, Travis Sherry, and joining me today is a man who calls himself a conservative, at least when it comes to credit cards, Jason Moore.
What up, Trav? How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jace. I never thought that someone from Colorado would call themselves a conservative, but I guess it's happening.
That's interesting, because we're diving into some of your reader questions on credit cards today, and they are common questions that come up even for me. You know, it's travel hacking is an exciting thing, and you love it when you get the free flight, but sort of the scary part is having to mess with your credit a little bit. So I'm really glad we're diving into this today.
Yes, and this is podcast gluttony still. This is the end of week two. Believe it or not, we have done two whole weeks where we have released 10 episodes, one episode every single weekday. We're going to do 22 shows throughout the month. So we're almost to the halfway point. And like you said, Jace, we will be doing reader questions. So about once a week, we have a show that is reader questions. So if you have reader questions, whether it's about travel hacking, whether it's about general travel, whether it's about location independence or starting a business from anywhere, or really anything related to this sphere of traveling and having freedom and living from anywhere you want, let us know. You could shoot me an email, trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com, and you can put in the subject line podcast questions. So we want your questions. We'll probably be answering them on a later podcast episode. We would really appreciate that. So last week, Jace, we took a reader question, a general reader question about, you know, picking the right backpack, and we broke that down. So if that's something that interests you, definitely check it out. Really good episode there. And today we're actually going to jump into five different questions, all related around credit cards. And I get this question a lot. And so if you're listening and you're not an American, all the strategies we talk about here for opening credit cards to get frequent flyer miles and travel points and hotel points and traveling for free will apply to you, but the specific credit cards I reference will not. So you'll have to find out the specific credit cards yourself. If you're an American, all of this applies to you. You can get any of the credit cards we mentioned. So definitely, credit cards are the best way to start travel hacking. And you can see the show notes of everything we talk about here, extrapackofpeanuts.com/creditcardquestions. We'll link up anything we reference. I definitely want you checking that out. If you're interested, but you hear us on the podcast and you don't know much, definitely check that out before you just start going crazy with applying for credit cards, because the worst thing you can do is go crazy without a blueprint and then, you know, end up hurting yourself in the long run. So if you do it right, you're going to really reap the rewards. Both Jason and I have been able to do it and teach ourselves and learn about it and been able to travel for free. So it's a very, very lucrative way to go about getting credit cards.
Yeah, I will give you a personal example right now. I just booked a flight from Denver to Philadelphia, and I'm taking a flight next week from Newark to Norway and back 4 months later. And the entire bill for all of those flights was just under $42. So there's travel hacking in action right there.
Yep. And I will be doing the same. I'm going from Denver to Las Vegas, from Vegas to Portland, from Portland back to Philadelphia, me and my wife, all three of those flights. It will cost us a total of $35. So it's crazy lucrative. It's worth it. It's not illegal in any way. Let's just get into the questions, though, because I think some of this will come out through the questions that are asked.
Sounds good.
All right. So, Jace, question number one.
I'm looking into buying flights for a wedding in December, and I want to go to Spain. This is from my cousin Val. Your cousin Val?
Yeah, from my cousin Val, which is actually pretty interesting, because as I was getting all the reader questions lined up, she texted me this exact question. I thought, this is the perfect one to lead off with. It was very serendipitous. So from my cousin Val.
Yeah, I just watched My Cousin Vinny, the movie, last week. So I was almost a little thrown off there. So I skipped that first line. Sorry.
Well, Jace, if you listen to the AJ Jacobs podcast that we released this week, this Tuesday, all of us are cousins anyway.
It's true.
So it really is your cousin Val as well.
I listened to it yesterday. Bang up job with AJ Jacobs, who is one incredible guy. We both saw him speak. You got to give Travis' podcast with him a listen. Just what an awesome guest to have on. What an interesting story, an amazing guy. You'll have to go check it out to see what we're talking about, but doing all these experiments with his life, and it's super cool. Anyway, back to the topic. Question number one from my cousin Val. Looking into buying flights for a wedding in December, and I want to go to Spain this summer as cheap as possible. I want to buy the flights on the best possible card. What card should I get?
Right. And so if that cut out, if your audio cut out a little bit there, guys, basically she's asking the best possible card for her to get because she wants to go to Spain for cheap. And she's buying flights in December. So she wants to maximize her spending. And I get this question all the time of what's the best possible card I can get? And the answer I give to that is, well, it's going to depend on your situation. So that's very vague. So what I'll start off by saying is if anyone wants specific advice, you can go to extrapackofpants.com/consult, C-O-N-S-U-L-T. What that will do is it'll bring up a form, a very short form. You fill it out, and I will then actually respond specifically to your needs, to where you want to travel, to how much you spend, to what cards you already have, all that information that you put in there, and I will give you specific personalized recommendations. That's the best way to do it because everyone's going to have different, you know, things that they, where they want to go and how much they spend. Now, talking in general terms there, there are a few cards that are, you know, the cream of the crop and that work for most people. For example, my cousin Val wants to go to Spain. One of the best currencies, and this is frequent flyer miles are a currency. And Jace, I always explain it like this, you know, Delta miles are not as valuable as United miles. And, you know, American Airlines miles fall right under United miles for me. It depends on what you want to use them for. But it's the same as if someone said, I'll give you $100 US, or I'll give you $100 Japanese yen, or I'll give you $100 Norwegian kroner.
Kroner.
I thought it was kroner. You know, you have to know the value of those things before you make your decision. And so one of the first things everyone should figure out is, well, what frequent flyer miles and points are most valuable? And to me, Chase Ultimate Rewards points are one of the most valuable currencies out there because with Chase points, you can do two things. You can transfer them to airlines like United and book tickets with your miles, or you can use them as cash and just pay for a flight like out of pocket, quote unquote, but use your Chase points instead of paying cash. And they're equal to 1.25 cents per point. So if you have 50,000 points, that's equal to roughly, you know, I'm not good at math, but $650 worth of travel. So Chase points are great. So what I recommended to my cousin Val, I said, all right, you want to go to Spain, you should open a Chase credit card. The best Chase credit card out there is the Chase Sapphire Preferred. It gives you 40,000 points right now, today. The offers always change, but it generally gives you 40,000 points when you sign up and you spend $3,000 in 3 months. And that's the other thing people need to be aware of. You have to spend a certain amount in a certain amount of time to get the sign up bonus. So if you spend $2,500 in 3 months, you will not get those points. So make sure you can spend the $3,000 in 3 months for the Chase Sapphire Preferred, 40,000 points plus 5,000 more if you add someone else on the card and they use it once. That's a great start. I mean, 45,000 points, that's almost two domestic trips within the US. It's a, you know, trip down to the Caribbean, it's a trip out to Hawaii, and it's almost enough for a trip to Europe or somewhere like that. So definitely, I recommended to her Chase Sapphire Preferred. It's the best one for people who just want to get started, don't want to deal with it, you know, jump all the way into travel hacking. They're like, what's the best everyday card to get? That's what I would recommend.
Absolutely. That is the card that I used to book my flights just recently. I have this Chase Sapphire Preferred. And I also have two Chase business cards, so I could double and triple up on points, which is a great thing you can do if you want to even further your point total. Branch out to the business cards is a higher minimum spend, but if you can somehow swing it, it's a great way to get points under the same umbrella and just bring them all together and get even more flights, you know, under the Chase brand.
And we should mention, too, that the Chase Sapphire Preferred, and you should look at this with cards. You always want to look at the sign-up bonus. You want to look at the minimum spend. And you want to look if there's any bonus categories. For example, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, anytime you spend $1 in either travel or eating out, which they call dining, you get 2 points for that. So if you spend $50 dining out, you get 100 points. Typically, a standard credit card will give you 1 point for every dollar you spend. So, you know, $50 eating out would be 50 points. With a Chase Sapphire Preferred, if you're dining or traveling and you're spending in those categories, you get double points. So it's a really cool way to rack it up. And as you mentioned, business cards, if anyone has a business as well, you can double up with getting kind of like the sister card to the Chase Sapphire Preferred, which is the Chase Inc. Bold.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we roll into question two, wind a little bit and just ask you about value, because that's a question that I get quite often, which is calculating the value of miles, because there's always the debate, well, I can just turn it into cash, or I can, again, use it for miles. Or you mentioned the $1.25 currency exchange rate per mile for United, for example. So you want to talk about what strategies people can use for figuring out how best to use their miles?
It's a great question. The thing you have to understand is that most airlines operate on a zone-based award chart. So let's take United, for example. What that means is, in order to fly an economy, a round-trip ticket economy from North America to Europe, you're going to pay 60,000 miles. And the best resource to figure out how many miles you're going to pay for a flight is to go to miles, M-I-L-E-Z dot B-I-Z, miles with a Z dot biz. We'll link that in the show notes. And another thing to remember, every airline is different. So United might charge 60,000 to go from North America to Europe, and you know, American Airlines might charge 50,000. Now, in this example, they both actually do charge 60,000, but it depends on the airline whose miles you are using. That's how you determine how much you need. So for example, what I tell people to get the best value out of their miles is to obviously use their miles for flights that would normally be very expensive. So a ticket from Philadelphia, or let's say New York to London, is North America to Europe. Well, that might cost you $600 out of pocket, right? So, you know, it's a pretty convenient route, a lot of flights, you know, pretty short. So $600 New York to London if you get a deal on it. But that's going to be 60,000 miles because it's North America to Europe. Whereas if you go from San Francisco, also in North America, all the way out to Istanbul, also in Europe, that ticket might cost you $1,200. Because it's longer, because there's not as many flights, you have to make more connections, whatever. So if you had to take those two trips, they're both going to cost you 60,000 miles with United because they're going from the same regions. One's going to cost more than the other. Use your miles for the one that costs more and then pay out of pocket for the one that costs less if you don't have enough miles to do both. So that's one way to make sure you're getting the best value. And so it constantly fluctuates, but I always tell people, as long as it's more than 1 cent per mile. So 1 cent per mile would be, it would be $600 to buy it, but it's 60,000 to buy it with miles. That's one CPM. If it's that or above, you're probably getting pretty good value. If it's less than that, you should probably buy the ticket outright. So if you're looking to use 60,000 miles for a ticket that's $300, you're only getting 0.5 CPM. Well, you know, if you're not ever going to take another trip, sure, use your miles. But usually you should use the miles for ones that are going to be more expensive.
Okay, those are great general rules to follow. Obviously, it'll be situation dependent, but I think that's great. Let's roll into question number two here from Karen Walzer. I hope I am pronouncing that correctly. She's a member of the Frequent Flyer Bootcamp right now, which is a program that you run. Trav, I wanted to take my travel hacking to the next level. Yeah, I have a travel podcast. I have a travel blog, but I still needed your help through the Frequent Flyer Bootcamp to get a couple more tricks under my sleeve. So I will throw that out there for you, because you probably won't say it yourself, but check out Travis's Frequent Flyer Bootcamp. Maybe we'll put in the show notes there a link to that so you can read about it. So the question is, for credit cards, I seem to remember reading something about credit card longevity or the average age of a credit card affecting credit scores. How does opening credit cards affect my credit score? Incredibly important question, and I'm going to turn it over to you to answer that.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this second because it's really important. If you don't keep track or take care of your credit score, you're not going to be able to continue to do this. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. So the people who come in and think, I'm going to get 10 credit cards all at once and all of a sudden, you know, and I just want all these miles. They're in it for the sprint. You know, really over the long haul, you're going to benefit by taking things slow, making sure you do it right. So first thing is definitely check your credit score. Nowadays, you can check it for free with Credit Karma or Credit Sesame. So there's no reason to pay for your credit score with all those things advertising, you know, you see on TV all the time. Credit Karma, Credit Sesame, those will be linked in the show notes. So extrapack.pn/credit card questions. You can get them there. Definitely check your credit score. If it's over 700, you should be able to get the best credit cards, the best credit cards out there. That's a great score, anything over 700. So as far as credit scores works, there's a few factors that go into it. And one of them is, as Karen mentioned, the average age of your credit cards. So if you're older and you have a lot of credit cards from before, they're helping your average age stay up. So if they don't have an annual fee, don't go about closing them. And we'll talk about closing them a little later. But, you know, keep them open. Everyone thinks, I want to get a new credit card, so I'm going to close my old one. That's not the case. Unless there's a reason to close the old one, like it has an annual fee or something like that, keep it open. It's only helping your credit score. The biggest part of your credit score is determined by your credit to debt ratio. What that basically means, the way I describe it, Jace, is if you come to me and I don't know you and you ask for $10, I'm probably not going to lend you $10 if I met you on the street, not because of how you look. I mean, that might be a reason, but more because I have no idea if you're ever going to pay me back because I don't know you. If you come up to me though and say, can I have $10? And there's two people there that say to me, yeah, Jason's been good for it. He paid me back. I think, all right, you know, maybe I would lend him this. And then if you came up to me and asked me for $10 and there was 15 people there and they all said, yeah, Jason's paying me back every time, I would feel very confident in lending you the $10. That's kind of how credit card companies look at it. So in the long run, the more credit cards you have and the more credit you have, the more likely it is going to be that you get approved and your credit score over time will go up. So it initially gets dinged a tiny bit for applying for a credit card, but the more you have, the more trustworthy you are. In the long run, your credit score is probably going to go higher. So 3 years ago, when I first started all this, I had zero credit cards. So I did have a mortgage, so I had some credit there. And my credit score was like in the low 700s because I didn't have a lot of credit, but I had never, you know, defaulted on my mortgage or paid it late or anything. And so I opened up the first credit cards. Now, I will not tell people to go this crazy right off the bat, but over the past 3 years, I've opened up probably 30 credit cards very systematically. I keep them organized. I have a spreadsheet and I pay them off. That's obviously the huge thing that has to be mentioned. You have to pay them off every month or all of this makes no sense. So over the past 3 years, my credit score has gone from like 710 or 715 up into like the 770s, 780s by opening all those credit cards and having more available credit. So in the long run, opening credit cards will affect your credit score positively. Right when you open it up, they have to check your credit score so that makes a ding of like 2 to 4 points usually for every time they check your credit score, the credit card companies, but then that will rebound within a couple months. So don't think that you only can have two credit cards and you should close one and to open another. That's the biggest myth out there. Make sure you're keeping old ones open because you're going to help your credit score in the long run.
Man, and you are the extreme example with 30 cards. So if you can pull this off and still up your credit score, that really gives hope to everybody, I think.
Yeah. And like I said, you don't have to get 30 at once. I always tell people start slow, get one or two, get used to paying off the credit cards, especially if you've never had credit cards before, like when I started, get used to paying them off, set up automatic payments, understand them. And I should mention with the 30 I have, I only use about three every day or consistently. The other ones sit in a sock drawer and I bring them out for certain things, but really I got them because they offered good sign-up bonuses. So it's not like I'm juggling 30 and I have to remember to pay off 30. I'm really juggling three and then the other ones kind of sit away.
I don't necessarily want to track 30 credit cards. I know I could do it and get a lot more miles and everything, but it's just something I don't really want to deal with to the extreme, you know, and it still benefits me even just having the cards that I have, the handful of cards that I have. So it's still worth getting into travel hacking just for the free flights, even if you don't want to go absolutely bananas like my boy Trav here and get 30 cards. We're going to roll into question number 3 from Lori Berry, who is also a current member of Frequent Flyer Bootcamp. And she writes, how do I know which cards I should keep open and which I should close? Which ones do you keep open?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of the things I tell, I just said, don't close credit cards unless there's a reason. Now, one of the reasons you might want to consider closing a credit card is a lot of the best travel credit cards have an annual fee. And a lot of them will waive the annual fee for the first year. So let's say you get a card and it gives you 50,000 miles and it has an $89 annual fee and it waives the $89 fee for the first year. Well, okay, hello, 50,000 free miles. Like, we'll take that every day. Even if it didn't waive the annual fee, you're getting 50,000 for $89 if you had to pay. But the second year, you don't get that 50,000 again, right? I mean, you only get the sign up bonus once. So then you have to decide which ones to keep open, which ones to close. I keep a really simple rule with this. I tell people, no matter how many cards you have opened, always keep at least 50% open for the long haul. So if you open up 30, have at least 15 that are active. If you open up 4, have at least 2. So always keep it above 50%. That's going to help your credit score balance out. So just, you know, closing one isn't going to crush your credit score unless, of course, that one is one you've had for 20 years and the only one you've had, and then you close it and it kills your average age of accounts. So, you know, for the new ones that you're opening up, keep a 50-50 balance or more. Now, determining which ones to keep open is obviously also going to be subjective based on how you use it. I keep them open for three reasons. The first reason is if they have no annual fee. If you have cards with no annual fee, there is absolutely no reason to ever close that card. It is only going to help your credit score. So if you have a Chase Freedom card, which is probably the best no annual fee card out there, keep it open. If you have a card from when you were a college student 30 years ago with no annual fee, keep it open. Never close a no annual fee card unless there is some crazy extenuating circumstances, of which I can't even think of a reason. So there you go. Keep them open. The second is if they offer an anniversary bonus. So for example, a lot of hotel cards do this where, like my Marriott card, I believe it's $89 a year, but it gives me one free night in a category, I think it's 1 to 5 of a Marriott. And so I stayed in a Marriott in Shanghai that was $255 a night. I had a free night voucher. And usually you don't like get an actual voucher in the mail. It just is attached to your account number. So you would call in and say, I want to use this free voucher. And so for $89, I got a $250 hotel night in a Marriott. So if they offer you something every year when you pay the annual fee, then keep it open, assuming it's worth it. And most of them do. US Airways used to have a card that offered you 10,000 miles for $89. That's 10,000 miles is worth more than $89. The free night is worth more than $89 or $79 or whatever it is. So keep them open if they offer an anniversary bonus. That's pretty straightforward. Even if it's like a little less value, let's say it's Southwest does this where it's like $69 annual fee, but they give you 3,000 points, which are about worth $50. I still keep that open because the discrepancy of that, it's basically a $19 annual fee. That's pretty low. The third reason would be if it's a card that I use all the time. It's one of my main cards that's my everyday spending cards. For example, the Chase Sapphire Preferred, which I mentioned is the best starter card. That is a $95 annual fee. And it doesn't give me an anniversary bonus. Obviously, it has the annual fee, but I use it every day all the time because I want to be able to rack up Chase points because they're the most valuable to me. So I keep that one open. So there's about two cards that I keep open that don't give me an anniversary bonus and obviously have an annual fee. But because I like those cards and the points they give me, it's worth it to keep open.
Absolutely. I love general rules, and those are three great rules. That's so much easier than trying to track 8 million things in your head. Just huge fan of general rules, so really breaking it down that way really, really helps. The next question is from EPOP Podcast Superfan Dave Olverson. He's trying to take a long-term approach to building miles, and he writes, I have a lot of miles with United, and I want to keep building. I already have the United Explorer card. I decided to keep it and pay the annual fee as it has turned out to be absolutely be worth it for me. There aren't other United cards out there, right? Should I cancel this card and then reapply? Should I get multiple United Explorers? I get the feeling that there are a finite amount of miles, and once you get all of the cards, you are done with the big chunks of miles you get for signing up. I don't really hear a lot about the longer term strategies of travel hacking. So he's really looking at the long term approach, which I know you take. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, this is a big question. I'll try to unpack it pretty quickly. Basically, a lot of people, you know, the big chunk of miles, as Dave says, that you get is from getting a sign-up bonus. So you sign up for the Chase Sapphire Preferred, you get 45,000 points. You'd sign up for the Chase United card, which he mentions they just had a bonus where it was 50,000 points. But after that, then what? After you get the sign-up bonus, then what? Well, there's two things. One, you can continue to get different credit cards. Now, there is a finite amount of credit cards, but you probably will not hit that number. You will hit the number of like really good credit cards out there. Let's say there are, give or take, 10 to 12 really good travel frequent flyer mile credit cards out there. You will hit that if you continue to apply for them and take this strategy of over a couple years, you may hit that. Now, he asked the question of whether he can apply for multiple United Explorer cards. And the answer to that is no. Most credit cards, you cannot get the bonus a second time. There are exceptions, but as a general rule, again, once you sign up for the Chase United Explorer card and you get the bonus, you won't then be able to like close it and get the sign up bonus again. You can only get the sign up bonus once. So, you know, unless you start really delving deep into travel hacking, you learn about these other cards that you can do things with and get it again and again. General rule, only get the sign, you can only get the sign up bonus once. So he asked about United in specific. And so he opened a Chase United card, which gave him United miles. The best way to continue to get United miles for him is to start getting Chase points, because Chase points transfer to United, like we talked about. So you have the United card. It's a bit confusing, but the Chase United card is what we call an airline card because it's tied to a specific airline. So you earn United miles and that's it. The Chase Sapphire Preferred is what I call a bank rewards card. You're getting points with a bank. That bank is Chase. And one of the things you can do with those points is transfer to United. So he could go and get the Chase Sapphire Preferred, get a bonus from that. He could get the Chase Inc. Bold, which is the business version of that, get Chase points from that, transfer those points to United. So that's one way to continue to get United points. As far as the finite amount of miles, like I said, eventually you will end up kind of running aground of the best travel credit cards. But there's two things that happen. One, credit card companies will put out new cards from time to time. And anytime it's considered a new product, you can get the sign-up bonus again. Chase did this with their Chase Inc. Bold, and then they put out a Chase Inc. Plus. They are essentially the same card for businesses with one little difference. But you could get the bonus for the Chase Inc. Bold, and you could get the bonus for the Chase Inc. Plus, because they're technically two separate products. So that's one way. Credit card companies will put out new offers. We never know when they're going to come up, but when they do, even if you have all the best credit cards, you can take advantage of the new offers. The second way is you can start getting points that won't be huge chunks, but you can do stuff like shopping online. You can get chunks of points that way. So for example, I bought my parents a hot air balloon ride once off Groupon. It was $300 for Christmas, Chase. You'll love this. So Groupon, when you shop online through a shopping portal, and we'll link a video. I made a video tutorial of it. It's really easy. So don't think this is hard. We'll link that in the show notes. What happens is you go through Chase's shopping portal and it redirects you to like any online store in the world, basically Nike, J. Crew, Groupon, whatever it is. And you get a certain amount of bonus points for doing that. So Groupon was running a special at Christmas where you were getting 30 bonus points for every dollar you spent. So I spent $300 on a hot air balloon ride for my parents. 300 times 30 is 9,000. So I got 9,000 bonus points off of that for shopping online. So I think my math is right on that. But yeah, 9,000 bonus points is equal to like $125. So in essence, their $300 hot air balloon ride really cost me like $175. So shopping online is a way to really kind of just chunk out points as well. Not as big as the sign-up bonuses, but they will add up. And the other strategy is, of course, to use your credit card for everything, for purchases that you would normally make, not to go buy yourself a new dog and a big TV and a couch and a hot tub, but purchases you would normally make, use your credit card instead of paying cash, and you'll just constantly get points like that. If you spend $30,000 a year on a credit card, you'll get 30,000 points, or maybe 50,000 if you're getting bonuses and stuff like that.
I don't know how you're going to top a hot air balloon ride for next year's Christmas gift, Trav.
I've already come up with the idea that I will never top that. Like I just said, here it is. Here's the only nice gift I'm going to get you. It's all downhill from here, folks. And pretty soon you'll be in a nursing home, so you won't even remember.
Ouch. I can't even believe you got a hot air balloon ride online like that through the Chase portal. That's great to know. I mean, that's going to be my first stop next year for Christmas, see what kind of experiences they have there.
Online shopping rules, man. I hate going to the mall. I hate getting dressed.
Oh, yeah.
And so basically here I can get points. I don't have to get dressed and I don't have to deal with any traffic or finding parking spots. It's the best.
Wait, you hate getting dressed? Is that why you're recording this in your underwear?
I guess I should say dressed well enough to go outside, right? Like, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Travis is not actually in his underwear right now, thankfully. Question number 5 comes from Danny Newman. He's asking about poor credit. He says, I'm 26 and have traveled quite a bit domestically, but now I want to go to Japan, which is a place Travis has spent a lot of time.
I'm wearing a Japanese jersey right now. I do have clothes on, folks. I'm wearing a Japanese soccer jersey.
He is dressed. Danny writes, my big dilemma is credit. I just got my first credit report and my score is 666. The only negative marks I have are I missed my first few student loan payments. I'm current now, though. I have a terrible car loan that I'm paying off early because of high interest, and I have a joint Ashley Furniture account with my girlfriend. I've never had a credit card. Based on what I've told you, how would you suggest I go about getting the cards I need?
Yeah, this is a great question, and I get this a fair bit about, you know, I guess I wouldn't say bad credit. 700 is excellent. Anything above 600 or 650 or 30 is considered good. Below that is like poor or bad. Doesn't matter. Well, it does matter what you have, but you can always work your way out of it. And it is, again, this long-term strategy. So when I first started this, I had never checked my credit. I didn't even have a credit card, right? I was 28. I had a mortgage and I applied for a credit card and I got denied. And I'm like, well, this is weird. And then I checked my credit score. So I did it all backwards, right? And that's why I'm trying to help people out now. And then I saw that there was this thing on my credit score, that a delinquent account. I had no idea what it was. It was for Verizon Wireless. I had never had Verizon Wireless before. So there's a stat at floating out there. I don't know the exact number, but it's over 50%. I think it's like 65% of people's credit scores have misinformation on them, which is insane. But when you consider all the credit that people have and everything going on and all the bills, it kind of makes sense that it doesn't get reported really well. So the big thing you want to do is check your credit score and make sure everything on there is yours. So this Verizon Wireless thing that I had wasn't mine. So then I had to learn, well, how do I get this off my credit score? I had no idea. So I started researching. And really what you can do is you can go to the credit bureaus and you can submit a request, basically a thing that says, this isn't mine. They'll look into it and they'll take it off. And that will obviously boost your credit score. So make sure your credit score is right before you even start applying for things. And I did a post on that, and we'll link that up again, of kind of the steps I took to get mine. Mine was about 625 because of this delinquent account. As soon as I got that off, and then there was another thing that you can write, pay for delete means if it is yours and you want them to delete it off your credit score, you can pay them whatever you owe, or even about 50% you can usually negotiate down, but tell them they have to delete it off your credit score rather than mark it as paid, because marking it as paid will not help your credit score near as much as if they delete it. So again, that gets into a little bit of specifics, but I have written a post about improving your credit and we will link that, and it goes through the steps. If it is 626 though, and that's your score and you're like, okay, it's only because of one student loan payment that I missed, you can do two things too. You can also write the company and say, hey, I'm looking to apply for a credit card. I'm looking to get a mortgage, whatever it is. You know, this is the only negative mark on my credit report. This happened 3 years ago. I have been current. I have always paid it up. Is there a way, as a courtesy, that you can take this late payment off? And some companies will do that. They'll look and they'll see and they'll say, oh, he's been really good since then. We're going to take it off because this is affecting them. Now, stuff will drop off your credit report after 7 years anyway, but 7 years is a long time to wait. So if it's not close to 7 years, you can write the company and you write them what's called a goodwill letter. And again, that'll be referenced in the post that I'm going to link up about improving your credit. But that's one way to go about it. And if they take it off, then of course your credit score will skyrocket. If you can't get any of that to happen, you want to start with a credit card that isn't one of the best credit cards out there. So Chase, we talked about the Chase Sapphire Preferred. If you're over 700, that's the best starter card. They also have one called the Chase Freedom, which is like a lower version of that card. It has no annual fee. It's for people with just, you know, regular average credit, not excellent credit, or people who don't have a lot of credit. So like Danny said, he doesn't have a lot of credit. He doesn't have a bunch of credit cards. So if you're someone who's new, and I just talked to my brother through this yesterday, you know, he doesn't have a credit card yet either. You might want to start with a lower level credit card because you have a better chance of getting it. And then after a year, you know, you pay off that credit card, you become, you know, a good client of Chase. After a year, not only will your credit score be high, but even then when you apply for a better Chase card, you can say to them, I've had the Chase Freedom for a year. I've always paid it off. I'm looking to upgrade to a better card. And then they'll probably, you know, you've already built a rapport with that company. So those are the two things you would do.
Yeah, there's so much involved. I mean, you've heard Travis go off on all these questions, and I'm pretty sure he could have gone on for even longer on some of these just because it's always changing. You know, airlines are changing their rules about their frequent flyer programs. New credit cards are coming out. There's all these credit score and all this stuff. This is why it's great to get on Travis's email list because he will keep you updated on all this stuff. If you want to get into travel hacking, you're serious about it, head over to Extra Pack of Peanuts and just sign up because it's too much to track. And Travis does all the hard work of filtering through all stuff. And then he'll send you the important stuff, breaking it down to these general rules. And then you won't have to go to 8 million places and troll through forums and all this stuff to figure out what's new and what's changing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Chase. It is always changing. So you may listen to this a year in the future and you might say, that Chase Sapphire Preferred card doesn't even exist anymore. You know, so stuff is always changing. I tried to give very general basic rules that will probably hold true overall. Like you said, these general tips. And obviously the more specific stuff, you know, you can come to the blog and read about. I always urge people to email me if they have questions, because especially if they're starting out, because it can be a bit confusing. And I want them to be set on the right path right away rather than start doing stuff the wrong way. So, and again, if you want to know which credit card to get, the best recommendation I can give you, it takes me a lot of time. I get a lot of these a day, but it's something I'm very passionate about, is making sure people get started on the right path. You can go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/consult, and that will send me all your specific information, and I will write you back personally, every person, and say, here's what I recommend based on your situation. So that's the best way to start if you're thinking, I heard this, I want to get into it, I want to figure out what credit cards I should get, or I already have a bunch of credit cards, but I want more, which one should I go for now? I'll help you out with that. I couldn't agree more. You know, get started on the right path. If you're a part of the email newsletter, you'll get updates and stuff when stuff does change. So I want to say thank you to Danny, Dave, Karen, Lori, and my cousin Val, as well as your cousin Jason. Everyone, you have no idea what we're talking about. If you haven't listened to the AJ Jacobs podcast we released this week, go do yourself a favor. AJ is probably one of the funniest people I've ever met. He's a New York Times bestseller. That's how funny he is, because he writes humor books. Awesome dude. We're all cousins, Jace. You, me, yeah. Val, even Lori, Karen, Dave, Danny, all cousins.
And you, wherever you're listening to this, you are our cousin as well.
We are all cousins. And remember, guys, if you have questions regarding travel, whether it be travel hacking, general travel tips, like we mentioned, we did one on what backpack to buy. So any general travel tips you want or anything like that, being location independent, Jason is a location independent entrepreneur. He runs his business from anywhere. He can work from anywhere. So can I. So we can teach you stuff about that. So anything like that or closely related to that, we want to hear it. Send your questions to trav@extrapackofpeanuts. Put podcast question in the subject line, and you have a shot of getting it answered on the show. So, Jace, I tell him, don't forget the old adage, there are no stupid questions, just stupid people.
Wait a minute. Wait, that doesn't sound
Whoops. Right. Yeah. Whoops, wrong one. I'm just kidding. I'm a huge proponent of asking questions all the time. So the adage I'm actually looking for is like, the only dumb question is the one that doesn't get asked. So make sure you ask your questions. Guys, I want to say thanks so much for listening today. What a good show to record. Chock full of information. Jace, thanks for asking the questions and for coming up with some of your own. Guys, thanks for the ongoing support of Extra Pack of Peanuts, as well as Podcast Gluttony. We're really taking off here. It's been a lot of fun. If you love what we're doing, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, however you listen to it. You can leave us a review, and we might read it actually on the air. So today's feature review comes from DHAT14, who writes, Trav does a good job helping those wanting to improve their travels and also the beginning travel hacker. I really enjoyed the podcast with Benny Lewis on learning languages. I would also recommend that podcast. Benny has learned 11 languages. He will teach you to be fluent in 3 months, just like his website says. And if you are a beginning travel hacker, this show was definitely for you. So thank you, D-Hat. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Jason, for coming on again. And I think you're going to...
Thank you for having me.
I think you're going to send us off here.
I am. I'm just going to let you know that until tomorrow, happy free travels.